The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yosef Jacobowitz, Mechaber Sefer Gvul Rishonim on Erevin, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
To dedicate a parsha or an entire sefer, please call 1-888-485-8223 or email info@thehalachacenter.org.
Coming up soon, Yom Tov Shavuos. Everyone knows the famous minhag to have macholi cholov, milch gefud, on the Yom Tov of Shavuos, which actually are Ramah. The halachos of Shavuos are found at the end of Hilchos Pesach and Shulchan Aruch. And the Ramah in Aruch Chaim Siman Tov Tzai Dalad, Siv Gimel, writes that minhagim bekam mekumis, the minhag is in many places, lachol macholi cholov, to eat dairy foods, milch gefud, biyom rishon of Shavuos, on the first day of Shavuos. And there's different reasons, different famous reasons that are given for this minhag. The Ramah says his reason. It appears to me that the reason is it's like the shnei tavshilin, two cooked foods, shloichem b'leil Pesach, that we have on Seder night, zeichel l'Pesach, zeichel l'chagiga. On Seder night, there's two tavshilin, two cooked foods on the ka'ara. One to remember the karban Pesach, and one to remember the karban chagiga. Kein oichlim, similarly, we eat maichol cholov, a milchol gefud, on Shavuos, achach maichol basar, and afterwards a flesh of food, and you have to bring with them two separate loaves of bread, two separate challahs, al shokha on the table, shemok mezbeach, at the stab of mezbeach, v'yesh b'zezik karim, there isn't this a remembrance, l'shtei alechem, shemekivim b'yema b'kurim. On Shavuos, on Thomas Beis HaMikdash, they brought a karim, that avolved l'shtei alechem, two loaves of bread, and to remember l'shtei alechem, we have milch of food, and afterwards flesh of food, and aloch is, that the challah, the bread that's eaten with milk of food cannot be eaten afterwards directly with pleishka food, and therefore when the hecher were forced to have two different separate challahs, two different lechem, like this as a remembrance to the shtei alechem. And the Mishtabura says, it's a kanyu dalad and tezvav, he explains this, and he says, therefore the minhag is by many, that the first lechem, the one they have with the milk of food, that lechem, that challah is actually baked with chemas, baked with butter. And this way, we should be forced to bring a second challah to eat with the meat afterwards. Because the milk of the bread, the milk of the challah, certainly cannot be eaten with basa, cannot be eaten with meat. Because the halach is that challah bread that's eaten directly, it's eaten directly with milchiks, cannot be eaten directly with meat afterwards. Rav Moshe explains in the tshuva, in the Gemara Moshe Yerdeya Chelek Aleph, Simen Lamed Ches, that only means the actual slice of challah, the piece of bread that was together, that was eaten, and that was meant to be eaten together with cheese, together with milchiks, cannot be eaten afterwards with meat. However, the general challah that was on the table with the milchiks, the rest of the challah, that was not someone's individual piece to be eaten with milchiks, the rest of the challah could be eaten afterwards with fleshes. And therefore, based on that, we would not be forced to have shtei lechem, two separate breads. Rav Moshe says that there are people who have a minig, it's based on the Hagayis Ashri, that the challah that was on the table with milchiks should not be eaten with fleshes, and vice versa. That's not Me'ikar Adin. Me'ikar Adin, only the actual piece of challah or slice of bread that was on your plate to eat with the milchiks cannot be eaten afterwards with fleishiks. But the general challah that was on the table, Me'ikar Adin, it could be eaten afterwards. If it was on the table, on the table with milchik food, it could be eaten afterwards with fleishiks. And Mishtabura is saying over here that in order to be forced to have two different lechems, two different breads, some have the minig, no'agu, there's a minig to have actual butter in the bread. Now this presents a different question, because the halacha is, it appears in Yerideya Siman Tzadi Zayin, the end of Hilchos Basar V'Cholov, that really, one is not allowed to make milchik bread. One is not allowed to make challah milchiks. And the reason is, because there's a chashash, because there's a concern that they might forget that this actual bread is milchiks, and they might come to eat it afterwards with fleishiks. And there'll be oivar chas v'sham on the isra of Basar V'Cholov. So because of this, challah bread has to be made parak. So how do we have this entire case that Mishtabur is talking about, that there was a minhag to actually bake butter in the challah, to have milch in challah? So the answer is, the one looks over there in Yerideya Siman Tzadi Zayin, in the Shulchan Aruch, and in the other poskim, they'll see that there's many exceptions, many circumstances under which one is allowed to bake milch in challah. One primary example is that if one bakes only a davar mu'at, only enough to eat by one suda, so then they can make milch in bread, because since it's only enough to eat by one suda, and this suda is a milch in suda, we're not afraid that afterwards they're going to end up eating with fleishiks, because the assumption is if they only baked enough to eat by one suda, one meal, so they'll eat it by that meal. And that's it. There won't be any leftovers afterwards, and they might, chas v'shalom, come to eat with fleishiks. Another option is they have to make a shinei tzura. if they make it differently, if it has a different shape or some other obvious siman on the outside of this bread that's baked differently and looks differently than regular challah, the regular bread, that's also good enough that now they can make a milchiks, or now they're afraid that they'll end up eating it chas v'shalom with fleishiks, because since it has a different surah, it looks different, so it's obvious it'll be a reminder that this, the milchik challah, and should not be eaten together with fleishiks. There are other forms of lechem that could be eaten, that could be made milchiks, and they're not afraid they're going to be eaten together with meat, and that is if there's a form of lechem, a form of bread, so to speak, that's not usually eaten with meat. For example, cake. One can make a milchiga cake or milchiga cookie because it's not the derech to eat cake and cookies directly with meat. This does not pertain to the mishtabur we're talking about, because the mishtabur that we're talking about here by the lachos of Shavuos says they would make the actual challah for the milchiga suda milchiks. They would make the actual challah with butter and the challah. So it's a general halacha that one should be aware that milchiga cake and milchiga cookies are okay because it's not the derech to eat them with meat. We're not afraid that one's going to come to eat them with meat, because it's not the way a person eats cake or cookies. One does not typically eat it directly with meat. However, when it comes to the challah the Mishnah Berurah is talking about, it must be that the minhag was to make a small amount of challah, only enough for one suda, or that the challah had a shini tzura. There was something that was different about it. Maybe it actually had some butter on the outside, so you could see the butter, or even if the butter was on the inside, it was not on the outside, it was just the ingredient inside. However, there's a shini in the tzura, it was made differently, and therefore there's no issue of making milchik bread, because it's obvious that this is not the regular challah, and this should only be eaten with milchiks or with par, but should not be eaten with fleishiks. Now, after one would finish eating the milchik part of their suda and put away the milchik bread, so now in their maz scenario, in their maz days, they would now take out different challah, different bread, and they would eat fleishiks. Now, do you have to bench in between after you finish eating the milchiks before you want to eat the fleishiks? So Mishnah Berurah of Kantas Zion says that's not necessary. Ain tzarach l'hafsik b'berachas hamazon. One does not have to interrupt with benching in between. Rather, as long as he is mekaneach piv yofa v'yadiach, that means he should eat something and drink something. After he finishes eating the milk part of the suda, he should eat and drink, and then they can move on to the fleishik part of the suda and take out the challah that's meant to eat the fleishiks and take out the meat. There are some people who have a minhag based on the Zohar HaKadosh. The Zohar HaKadosh says that one should not eat milchiks or fleishiks b'shah achas u'v'suda achas. And therefore, some people have the minhag to bench, and then they would wash again to eat fleishiks, because they would not eat milchiks and fleishiks in the same suda. However, there's not the ikar adin. The ikar adin is the first over here in the Mishnah Berurah, that one could eat milchiks and fleishiks in the same suda, as long as they eat the milchiks first, then they eat and drink something to clean out and wash out their mouths. The eating cleans out the mouth, that's the kinuach, and the drinking washes out the mouth, that's hadachal. And then they can move on to the fleishik part of the suda. Those who have the minhag of the Zohar HaKadosh, so they would bench between. They also would wait in between, because the same Zohar that says not to eat milchiks and fleishiks b'suda achas in one suda, also says not to eat milchiks and fleishiks b'sha achas at the same time, which might mean the same hour. And therefore, those who go to the minhag of the Zohar, besides benching in between, they'd also wait an hour in between. But this is only an extra chumrah that some people have the minhag based on the Zohar HaKadosh. Your Moshe also writes that this is only an extra chumrah only for those who have the specific minhag. But those who don't have the minhag could go with what it says before Shem Mishnah Berurah, that as long as it's kinuach v'adachal, is eating and drinking after the milchiks, before the fleishiks, that's good enough. They did not have to wait an hour, and they do not have to bench in between. One who wants to eat milchiks and later on eat fleishiks, and did not eat and drink in between, and did not makbid on the zayr of waiting an hour, how long do they have to wait in between? So they accept the psak, they have to wait half an hour in between. That's good enough, and they did not have to have to wait an hour if they're not makbid on the zayr HaKadosh. Now, Mishnah Berurah says that there's one exception. There's one case where one cannot eat milchiks and then fleishiks in the same suda. One exception where kinuach v'adachal, eating and drinking between, will not be sufficient. And that is if someone had gvina kasha, if someone had hard cheese. See, everyone knows that halacha is that after you eat fleishiks, before you eat milchiks, you have to wait in between. It's for halacha found siman peites, and the minhag of most of Klal Yisrael is to wait 6 hours in between fleishiks and milchiks. Some say waiting 5.5 hours, or 5 and a little bit, some say it's 6 hours. But the meaning of most of Klai is to wait 6 hours, or something that is close to 6 hours, it's halachically the equivalent of 6 hours. The Ramah, in Siman Pei Tes, Yerdei Siman Pei Tes of Bei, says that there's also a minig that after eating gvina kosh, after eating hard cheese, one should also wait the same amount of time before they eat meat. The same way after eating meat, one waits 6 hours before they eat milchit, before they drink milk or they eat cheese. The Ramah brings a minig also to wait 6 hours after eating hard cheese, before one eats meat. And their Ramah seems to feel that this is a good chumrah. Now, other Other poskim don't go with this, but l'maisa, this is the accepted psak, that after eating gvina kasha, after eating hard cheese, one should wait 6 hours before they eat meat. Now the question is, what is this gvina kasha? What is this hard cheese that's being referred to as siman peites, and do we have this nowadays? It's known that Rav Aaron Kotler Zatzal, when he came to America, he lived in America in the 1940s and 1950s until he was nifter in Tavshach Chav Gimel in the end of 1962. And he said that here in America nowadays, we don't have gvina kasha. We don't have this hard cheese after which one has to wait 6 hours before they eat meat. One won't have to wait 6 hours, one won't have to bench in between. Rav Aaron says that we didn't have this nowadays. Now there are places to hold that we do have today in the 21st century, we do have this type of a cheese. The Star K goes, the psak of the place of the Star K, or Mesh Haim Shlita from Baltimore, that says after certain types of cheese, Parmesan cheese, one does have to wait 6 hours before they eat meat. He feels that even though Rav Aaron Kotler himself may not have seen this Parmesan cheese, but today that we know we have this cheese, one does have to wait 6 hours after before he eats meat. There are other places who disagree with this psak and feel that even nowadays, in the 21st century, we do not have this cheese. In Kovitz Alachas, my Rabbi Yerushua Kamenetsky Shlita on Hilchus Chag HaShvuas, Alachas HaShvuas, he says over there that we do not have this cheese nowadays, and he says that the only cheese that one will have to wait 6 hours afterwards is a cheese that's very hard. Baron said in his days it has to be cheese that you have to cut with the ribeyes or some sort of a saw almost, like cut with a saw in order to cut it. And even today in the 21st century, we don't have cheese that's this hard. The cheese that other places can feel needs 6 hours afterwards, the quote-unquote 6 hour cheese. I was by a Rebbe Reb Shmuel in Sivan of Tashin Ein Aleph, that's approximately 10 years ago, when someone brought this cheese, a block of this cheese to him, and they took a knife, and they cut it, and Reb Shmuel laughed at it, and he said, this is not the hard cheese that the earlier Paiskim are referring to. So we asked him, so what is the cheese after which you have to wait 6 hours? And Reb Shmuel said, you weren't there in Europe, I was there in Europe, you weren't there in Europe, you have been there in Europe before the war, you would have seen that cheese, you will understand this cheese does not compare to that cheese, and this is not the cheese after which you have to wait 6 hours. So we have machlekes of current poskim, contemporary poskim, if we have the hard cheese after which one has to wait 6 hours, or if we don't have that cheese, and everyone should ask their own shayla. Now, another shayla that comes up with Bosu v'cholov, Shavuos time, is in terms of fleishka ovens and milchka ovens. See, some people have two ovens in their kitchen. They have one in which they make fleishka foods, the fleishka oven, and one in which they make milchka foods, the milchka oven. However, others only have one oven. And they sometimes want to use the oven for fleishigs, and afterwards want to use it for milchigs, and vice versa. And the preparations for shvuas, when they're going to be making nice milchigah foods, as well as also making the fleishigah foods for shvuas, so it comes up, how could they go back and forth between fleishigs and milchigs in the same oven? What are the rules? How does it work? So let's first explain where this whole concept of a fleishigah oven or a milchigah oven comes from. It's because if you look in Hilchos Basar V'Cholov, in Yeridei Siman Tzadi Beis, Sivches, you'll find there's a concept of zeya, of steam, that if you have in the oven a machmas, a pan of milk, that you put in the oven under a kedeir shabasar, under a pot of meat, the Shulchan Aruch says, based on Tshuvas HaRosh, that the zeya oil, the steam comes up, the nivla, and it gets absorbed in the kedeira, in the fleish kapat basura. And now, the israsa. And now, the flesh kapat and the meat that's in the pot become usr, become basar v'cholov, because the steam coming up from the machmas v'cholov, from the pan of milk goes up, it gets absorbed in the flesh kapat, in the flesh kapat, and now you have basar v'cholov on top, and that flesh kapat together with the meat in it now become usr for basar v'cholov. Now, this halacha only applies if the steam that goes up is yatsa lettuce play. It's steaming hot. Hot enough that someone will touch it, the finger will jump back. So machlokes ha'poskim exactly how hot is considered yatsa lettuce play. Moshe writes in one place that somewhere between 110 and 160 degrees. We're not sure exactly what temperature it is, but somewhere between 110 and 160 degrees Fahrenheit, that's the level of heat which is considered yatsa lettuce boy. If Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva about it, he writes that the level of heat for yatsa lettuce boy has to be at least 104 degrees, or maybe at least 113 degrees and higher to be considered yatsa lettuce boy. If the steam is below that, even if you visibly could see the steam, that does not make any bleed, and does not create an issue of bas v'cholt. So we're talking about very hot steam. Like the Shulchan Aruch's case is when you had the milchiks and the fleishiks both in the oven at the same time, the steam went up in the old-fashioned small oven, so you really had issues of zeya in your oven. Now, our ovens are much bigger, and when you cook something, you bake something in the oven, we typically do not see steam flying around our ovens. Still, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, Negris Moshe Yeredeya, Chilak Aleph Siman Mem, that even nowadays our ovens do have an issue of zeya, of steam, and therefore if you make something fleishiks in your oven, The steam is going to go up, get absorbed in the top of the oven, the sides of the oven, and then the salam makes something milchiks afterwards in the oven. The milchiks steam will go up, it'll get absorbed, it'll hit the same top and sides of the oven, and it's going to pull out, it's going to schlep out the fleishka zeya, the fleishka steam that's there from before. The two steams will mix together, and now you have basav chalav in your oven. And that's why people in America are careful to have separate fleishiks in the oven, milchiks in the oven separate, because the Moshe felt that in our ovens nowadays, there are issues of zeya, of steam, in the oven. Now, in the Sefer Emes Yaakov from Yaakov Kamenetsky, it's brought that if there's 24 hours between the fleishiks and milchiks are made, assuming the oven is clean, and there's 24 hours in between, that's good enough. And that is, as we'll discuss in Mitzvah Shem soon, that after 24 hours, the blias, the absorbed taste that's in the that's inside the oven or that's inside the pot, even if they come back out, they already don't give a good taste. After 24 hours, it's already nice and tamlof gam. Even if the taste and the flavor could still come out from the walls of an oven or could still come out from a pot, it does not give a good taste anymore. It only gives a bad taste. And if from the Raisa, according to the Torah, this cannot create an issue of basav chalav or any other issue of taruvus or machalas asurus. From the Rabbanan, Chazal still made a gzera of ena benyame ot benyame. That means even if there's a taste, a flavor that's absorbed from longer than 24 hours ago, still one should be careful with it and avoid the scenario of basav chalav, even with the not good taste that's coming out after more than 24 hours. And on that, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky felt that our ovens nowadays, ovens in general are different than pots, especially our ovens nowadays, he felt that after 24 hours, we could make them. One looks carefully in the tune of Ramesh, you see Ramesh also seems to feel that after 24 hours, the halachas are more lenient when it comes to the ovens. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said with confidence that after 24 hours, assuming the oven was clean, that the issues don't exist. So therefore, if one makes fleishiks in the oven, and then waits 24 hours, as long as the oven is clean and there's no fleishka drips from the bottom of the oven, he can now make milchiks in the oven. Sometimes you have some burnt up stuff on the bottom of the oven, that would not be an issue. As long as there's no tangible fleishiks left in the bottom of the oven, after 24 hours, one can now make milchiks in the oven. And the same would be the opposite. One can make milchiks in the oven, and as long as there's no actual milchiks left in the oven, after more than 24 hours, he can now make fleishiks in the oven. Now sometimes you don't have time, and you can't afford to wait the 24 hours in between. So is there any solution how you can still make fleishiks and milchiks in your oven within 24 hours? So now that we explained that the whole issue of fleishik oven and milchik oven is because of the steam that comes out of the food, we can also understand that if either the fleishik food or the milchik food is covered the entire time it's in the oven, there's also no issue of zeya. Because zeya, steam only comes out if the food is exposed. But if the food is covered, the steam does not escape. So if either the fleishik food or the milchik food is covered, so then they can be made in the oven within 24 hours of each other. Also, there are certain foods that don't create steam at all. And therefore, there's altogether no issue of zeya with these foods. The Pesach Yeshuva over there in Yeradeh Simon Sayabes of Kanvav brings a Primogodim, the writes up here Rambam, Aram Moshe Feinstein goes with this Primogodim, he writes that we go with this Primogodim, he writes in the Shuva, in the aforementioned Shuva, that only a liquidy thing creates a zeya, creates steam that has halachic bearing. But a dry food, a Dover Yavish, a dry food does not create zeya, that will be a halachic issue. So if one made a roast, and 2 inches of gravy in his oven, and it's not covered, that makes steam in the oven from the gravy of the meat. No one should not make milchiks uncovered in the oven within the next 24 hours. However, if one baked chicken in their oven, and it was dry, there wasn't much sauce, so since it's dry, so that does not create zeya. And then one would be allowed to make milchiks in the oven, even shortly thereafter. So now we have another solution, how one can make both fleishiks and milchiks in the oven within 24 hours of each other, even if both are uncovered, if either one of the two foods was a dry food. And then, therefore, one can make open fleishiks in their oven, and afterwards, they can bake challah in their oven, and besides the fact that they don't have to worry about the challah being considered fleishik of bread, that we discussed earlier in the share, but they also could take that challah out of the oven and make grilled cheese with it afterwards. They can eat it with milk. Because since challah is a dry food, it does not create zeya, does not create steam in the oven, and therefore does not schlep out from the top and the walls of the oven the fleishik steam that's in there from the fleishik food that one made before within the past 24 hours. So, as long as either of the foods is dry, we're also okay. There's another solution also, if one wants to make fleishiks and milchiks in the oven within 24 hours of each other. Besides the option of covering one or the other, and besides the hetter of either one of the two is something which does not create steam, like a dry food, one could also additional option is to kasher the oven in between. For kashering the oven to fleishiks and milchiks, liban kal is good enough, which means turn the oven to the highest temperature, let's say 550 or whatever it is, and when the oven beeps that hit that temperature, then you leave it on for another 20 minutes, and then the oven is kashered back to power, and you can make whatever you want afterwards. It has a new start, born again. If one's oven does not beep when it hits the highest temperature, and one doesn't have time to sit around the kitchen and wait to see when the beep happens, so they can assume that it takes not more than 20 minutes to hit the hottest temperature. So if they put the oven on the highest for 40 minutes, we can assume that it hit the hottest temperature and stayed on that hottest temperature for at least 20 of the 40 minutes, and then the oven is kosher back to parv. Now, a few more things I want to point out about the ovens. First of all, that we're discussing making fleishigs in the oven and then making milchigs afterwards. Or fleishigs in the oven and parv that one wants to eat directly with milchigs, like the example of the grilled cheese that one wants to make afterwards with the challah. However, if one makes fleishigs in the oven and less than 24 hours afterwards, he makes parv in the oven, eats the parv by itself, he would not have to wait 6 hours until he eats milchigs. The parv does not become real fleishigs, and therefore he does not have to wait 24 hours until he eats milchigs. So we're discussing primarily making real fleishigs and real milchigs in the oven, or making fleishigs in the oven, and then parv that one wants to eat directly with milchigs. Or making milchigs in the oven, and then making parv that one wants to eat directly with fleishigs. Another thing I want to point out, even though our ovens, we don't see steam flying around our ovens so much, and therefore a little more makel was steam our ovens, a microwave is different. A microwave where we see the actual steam, it steams up much more, and it's a new technology they didn't have in the times of Chazal. It was even a more recent invention in the times of Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Kamenetsky, and therefore microwaves may be different, and once you ask their own shiloh in regards to dealing with the microwave. One thing Rav Kamenetsky said is that even though the fleishigs and milchigs, if they're covered, so it does not create any zeh or steam in the oven, still one should never make fleishigs and milchigs in the oven at the same time, under any circumstance, even if they're covered. That we don't do. Now, discussing zeh, discussing steam over here, we've been discussing steam in the oven. What if one has a pot of chicken soup cooking, and then he lifts up the pot cover, and then he pours spices into the chicken soup? Do those spices, the spice container that he poured from, does that now become fleishigs and cannot be used with milchigs? So first of all, we said the steam is only has halachic bearing when it's yatz lettuce, but when steaming hot. Assumingly, if you held your hand there with the spices and poured spices into the chicken soup, it wasn't that hot there. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been able to put your hand there. Additionally, the opinion of the Aruch HaShulchan and some other poskim is that the zeh that Shulchan Aruch is talking about is only when the steam is contained in the oven, like the Shulchan Aruch's case, where it's all happening within the oven, like we've been discussing until now. However, if it's not in the oven, if it's like the chicken soup on the stovetop, so then the issue of zeh does not exist. Because since when the steam comes up, it spreads all directions, it does not retain its potency and therefore does not create any bleeds. There are other terim also with the spices, that when you're pouring spices out from the spice container, so bleeds don't go into the spice container. There are people who are annoyed that have separate spices or fleishigs and milchigs, and there are others who are annoyed that when they pour the spices into the chicken soup, they don't pour the spices directly over, rather they have the spices a little bit on the side and they pour it into their hand, and then they put their hand over the pot and pour it in. But if somebody did pour spices directly into the chicken soup, the spices do not become fleishigs and could be used afterwards for milchigs. We mentioned when it comes to the bleus, the absorption of Isser and the keli in a pot or in a pan, when it comes to Bas V'chalav and other Isserim. So first of all, the bleus only go into a pot or a pan when it's Yatz Lezboi, when it's steaming hot, which typically is the case when you're cooking, so obviously the pot or the pan gets steaming hot. And when it comes to washing dishes, we try to wash fleishig dishes and milchig dishes separately. However, by mistake, one washed the milchig dish with the fleishig dishes, or vice versa, typically nothing really becomes treif, nothing really becomes asr. Because when washing dishes, most people nowadays do not use yatz lettuce by water. Otherwise, they have to wear gloves when they wash dishes. Now, there are people who wear gloves when they wash dishes, but my survey has shown that nowadays most people don't. The water, they don't make the water as hot, they keep the water a little bit cooler, warm, even hot, but not steaming hot, and therefore they don't have to wear gloves. And therefore, the water is probably not yatz lettuce by. You can't be sure, but in most cases, probably not yatz lettuce by. Plus, they use dish detergent, which is soap, which is poigim, which means that the flavor that's going over from one thing to the other in the sink while you wash dishes is not too great, because you have the taste of the dish detergent mixed in. And there are other factors as well also. Bleus are typically given over in the klirish. In other words, one would have a pot they use to make meat, and then they turn around less than 24 hours later and make something milchus in it, that would be terrible, that would be treif, that would be basa v'cholot. However, that's only the actual pot that you cooked in. However, if you took the fleishiga, the meat, or the chicken soup out of the pot, and then you put it onto a plate, and then you take it off the plate, clean it off, and you put milchigs on the plate, that might not create an issue of basa v'cholot, because it's not the original klirishon, the meat that gave over the flavor into the plate going over to the milk afterwards, it's not taking place in the klirishon. It's not taking place in the original kli. And therefore, since it's not taking place in the original kli, the rules of bleus are different. Iri klirishon is mevashal, kdeklipa is mevashal a little bit. When you pour over from the pot, what you pour over into, that's also mevashal a little bit, but not to the same extent as the original klirishon. And a klisheni, the second kli, like the plate, is typically not mavashal, does not cook, and does not give over blias, does not give over flavor at all. Now there is a shaila about a dover gush. A dover gush means you have a solid item, like a piece of meat. In other words, we're discussing either a piece of meat or chicken soup. Chicken soup is liquid, but meat is solid. A solid piece of meat, the marshal, and other places can say, that does give over tam, it does give over flavor, blias and flavor, even the klisheni, even when it's not in the original kli. It's a shiloh what happens when you get to klishlishi, you pass it on to a third plate, does it still give over blias over there? The marshal says that davar gush, a solid item like a piece of meat, gives over flavor in a klisheni, klishlishi would be a shiloh. The Ramon, other places can hold not like that, and they hold, even a solid item does not give over tam, does not give over flavor in a klisheni. We generally try makbil and davar gush. Mr. Brewer brings down a few places, Nukas Pesach and Nukas Shabbos. But Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva that we only keep as a chumrah. Therefore, when there's other tshuva from other mitigating factors, we can be more makel. So somebody who has a shiloh of iri kli rishon or bli of a davar gush in a klisheni, they should ask their own individual shiloh. We also want to point out that we said that typically after 24 hours, the flavor that got into the pot is not good. And therefore, even if the flavor still comes out, it's only Isra l'chatchilam d'rabbanan and doesn't really make anything treif anymore. It's more than 24 hours. There is a big exception to this, and that's davar charef, a sharp item. For example, if someone fries onions in a fleishka pan, even the pan has not been used for fleishiks for more than 24 hours, it's possible the onions will still become fleishiks. This is not pashut, because it's not clear exactly which items are considered sharp enough to be davar charef nowadays. Also, when one fries onions, he over fries them in a significant amount of oil. And therefore, it could be the oil takes away the sharpness, the sharfkeit, we would say in Yiddish, of the onions. And therefore, it could be the onions will not have the effect of davar charef at that point to pull out the fleishka flavor from the pan and to make the onions fleishes. So if somebody did fry onions in a fleishka pan, and then they realized they want to use these onions for milchiks, or they mistakenly already put it into something milchik, or something they plant even milchiks, they should ask their own shiloh. There's a base mayor in your day, and the sim side evolved, that's megal, on many cases, b'dievet. Also, when one cuts an onion, so you should typically, the best is to cut it with a sharp harva knife. Because if you cut it with a fleishka knife, or if you cut it with a milchka knife, even if the knife was not used for fleishiks and milchiks the past 24 hours, since the onion is a davar charef, plus you have the duchka sakina, you have the pressure and the sharpness of the knife cutting it through, so that can also cause the onion to get the status of the knife. So for example, if you cut an onion with a sharp fleishika knife, even if the knife was not used for hot fleishiks in the past 24 hours, the onion also could be categorized as fleishiks afterwards. Here again, if one did that and then he plans on using it for milchiks, or mistakenly used it for something that's been eaten with milchiks, there's many kulas b'dievet, based on Abbe Smeir and other paiskim. And therefore one should ask their own shiloh. Now, if an onion or another sharp food came into contact with a spoon or the plate or with anything cold, that's nothing. That does not have any effect on the onion, nor is there any effect on the spoon or on the plate. That which there's extra chumrah here of davar charef is either when it's being cooked, even in a pot that was not used for fleishiks or milchiks the past 24 hours, but still after 24 hours, the sharpness of the onion can still bring out the fleishiks and milchiks flavor. And also, even in the cold form, when it's being cut with a sharp knife, the sharpness of the cut of the knife could also affect the onion, even if the knife was not used for fleishiks or milchiks the past 24 hours. But for dealing with cold, or not dealing with the sharpness of the knife, then there's no extra chumrah of davar charef.
The Beis Chabad on the Parsha series has been brought to you by the Beis Chabad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultations, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Chabad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.